Rolling. Rolling. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm okay. I mean, that's probably a lie, but yeah, I'm doing fine.
So you seem okay. Okay. And I'm thrilled to be here with you. So I hope that my excitement can, you know, bleed off onto you a little bit.
I love your enthusiasm, and I love it when you visit, and I love when we do these sort of monthly recaps.
This is the way to start this podcast, is not on bummers like I have the other two episodes, but this time, we're starting from a place of love and mutual admiration.
Yep.
We're feeling good. We're feeling tight and lean and ready to go. Did I peek? Did I peek a little bit, Jason?
I'm staring at the
road.
We're
going tight.
I think you're fine.
No, I'm good now. Yeah. But we're gonna start from this like sunny disposition, and we're gonna work our way down a little bit, mm-hmm. and then come back up. You know, the roller coaster, like a good song.
Sure.
You know, where you draw in right in the middle, and then you explode with a big chorus. That's what we're gonna do today, as we discuss our lives and gear news, the two most interesting subjects to us personally.
Yes, exactly. The May 2023 gear news. It'd be a week late. That's fine. It was a weak month in general.
It really weak. There was some hyped announcements that turned out to be nothing, shall we say. No shade to Epiphone, but I don't know. I mean, like, Dave Mustaine is incredibly cool. I don't want to diminish his legacy, but yay, we've got Epiphone models of his signature Gibson. I don't know. They just didn't.
Yeah.
First of all, it didn't feel like people were super excited to begin with about the Gibsons. Even though they're like pointy flying Vs, they are cool. But now we have affordable versions of it, which is itself cool. But I don't know.
Yeah.
It didn't hit me, Jason. Did it hit you in a certain way? No. Are you a big Megadeth fan?
What do you think?
Look, I don't like to pretend that I know what happens inside another man's skull. I'm just...
Usually we warm up to... we're only 2 minutes into this. Usually we warm up to this sort of banter, but I love it. I think more attention was paid to what appears to be a forthcoming Dave Grohl Epiphone.
Well, okay.
Was featured in some press photo or something.
Yes. Let's pull back the curtain a little bit.
Okay.
Now, the Dave Grohl signature Gibson is... itself based on Dave's favorite Trini Lopez models, which are my favorite.
The coolest.
Yeah. Firebird headstock. Diamond F holes. I guess you just call them diamond holes. They're not Fs, but that's how I relate to them. Anyway, so Dave's had this like long-running Gibson signature model with a tunematic bridge and a stop-tailed piece, unlike the originals. Mm-hmm. They had a trapeze. However, they are... prohibitively expensive. I think if you want to buy one of those now, they're like $8,000 to $12,000 is what I have seen, but probably more at this point because God knows the used prices are depressing.
Yeah.
So the introduction of a potential Epiphone model is, I think, that's very exciting to me, which stands in stark contrast to my feelings on the Dave Mustaine model. Maybe people who are huge Dave Mustaine fans are like, $1,200 green Epiphone, I'm there.
Yeah.
So, you know, different strokes for all kinds of folks. But the Dave Grohl is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. But not officially announced yet. Just showed up in a photo.
Just the apparition of an announcement hangs in the air. That's pretty exciting. Now, there is another Epiphone signature guitar that is essentially a Trini Lopez, but without the Trini Lopez Firebird headstock, and that's the Emily Wolf signature model. It comes in black and I think white now. I'm not certain about that, but it's got the diamond holes. So it makes perfect sense that Epiphone would be able to more easily take care of the Dave Grohl model.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's exciting. And you know, look, I support Epiphone making affordable versions of these, like, you know, very cool, but extremely expensive Gibson models that are out there right now, you know, which sometimes feel like, you know, collectors enjoy them more than players. But I'm really excited to see what happens with this Dave Grohl. Could be incredible. Could be a really exciting thing. Epiphone makes a great guitar. You know, their semi-hollows have such a great reputation and a storied history. You know, dating back to the days of the Beatles and then the days of Oasis.
Yeah.
You know, like the Beatles.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about the option of that. Although I will say, you know, I just I wish it didn't have a stop tail. That's me, you know, because I'm going to pull that off and put a Bigsby on, and I'm going to have holes that I need to cover with a custom made plaque. But I'm very excited.
You're a man with a plan. I love it.
Look, that's, you know, this is what I do. You know, I beautiful mind every guitar I see. and so I have a plan in place should that arrive. I'm sure it'll be available in that signature blue color, the Pelham, because that's like the Dave Grohl signature model color. There is a gold one. There are black ones as well. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I don't know.
Yeah. Now I'm just thinking that maybe you should for your Patreon have a video where somebody just holds up a flashcard of a guitar and you beautiful mind it and describe what you would do to it. That would be hilarious.
Jason, that is a good idea.
I'll be happy to do the roast arch or whatever it's called test.
The roast
of guitars.
Let's do free association. What does this guitar make you think of?
What would you do to it? What are your first repairs?
My God, that'd be great. Oh, if I get a Dave Grohl, the first thing I do to it? Pull the stop tail off, put a Bigsby, or I will go and find an old Lyre Vibrola because it's my second favorite vibrato in the whole world. I love them so much. I put a Lyre Vibrola on there. Custom made plaque won't fit. I don't think so. I'll have some holes to cover. Maybe I'll do pearl inserts like the 50s Gibsons. That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be cool.
You know, I don't know much about the specs since it's only been leaked. Maybe it comes with Gibson pickups. That would be cool. If they're burst buckers, I might go for something different. Never been a burst bucker fan.
All right.
They're a little squawky to me, a little, oh, you know, they've got that peak right in the mids that I don't enjoy. But, you know, 57 Classic or a pair of Wolf Tones or, you know, I don't know who makes a good humbucker these days. Who can say? So many people, maybe some of our supporters.
I don't know.
Maybe. We're not prepped. But yeah, otherwise, you know, the usual stuff. Cut the nut a little bit better. Yeah. Clean up some front work. I'd be a happy boy.
You got to get in on that video.
Video. Look. I said this on another podcast recently, but Mark Agnesi, if you haven't gotten my email, check your spam folder. love you, buddy. Yeah, but that's a pretty exciting Epiphone news for me personally.
Yeah, to go back to your first question about, I have the utmost respect for what the guys in Megadeth have done. But there is this sort of weird, and I say this, self-aware
with
as
all
a white,
the love in our hearts,
late 40s-year-old male, like there is this strange disconnect in the world, and it's not just Gibson, where signature models are made for 60-year-old-ish and up rock legends.
Yeah.
And then there's all these new initiatives that are trying to be more inclusive that feature like the 20 to 25-year-old set.
Yeah.
And as a 40s-something guy who grew up on indie rock and sort of shied away from metal because those people were scary when I was in high school, like, my heroes are not, you know, it's sort of interesting to just kind of ponder, like, you know, I certainly, and I think the market responded well to, like, the St. Vincent guitar that Music Man did.
That was great.
Love that. But it's like, why hasn't Kerry Brownstein or PJ Harvey ever been offered a signature
right?
model?
Oh, like my God, a Polly?
Or any number of, I mean, those are just, I just
give me
two women.
PJ Harvey Firebird? Yeah. Oh my God.
But the market, like they try, and it's probably just all done via committee, and you've got the committee of guys who live and breathe hard rock and blues, and then you've got the committee of young people who are brought into like, sponsor the next Coachella artist. And I totally, that's great. But that middle ground that I firmly occupy.
Yeah.
there's very little that excites me when I'm like, oh, of course. That
Why
person.
Isn't anyone thinking of 40-ish year old men? Ah!
Well, yeah.
I'm kidding, of course. You know what? It's funny that you bring that up because I was at a show last night. Thanks to my friend Ernie Bailey, who invited me to go see
Wire Instruments. Everyone should be following him.
Ernie is
former Nirvana tech.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Yes.
full stop, legend. Yep. But an incredible guitar builder. Wire instruments are always so exciting.
Yes.
Every time I get to pick one up, they look like nothing else. They perform like nothing else. They've got that cool 3-3 headstock where the bass strings are poking up through the headstock as you would normally find on a Fender style instrument, but then the high strings are strung like a classical. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Builds an incredible guitar. Anyway, Ernie invited me to go see the Yeah Yeah Yeahs last night.
Nice.
Which is my first time seeing them. Let me say, Karen O, oh, her voice is still perfect.
Yeah.
She was razor sharp on the notes. When she had an explosive moment, just screaming, caterwauling, it was incredible. Amazing show to witness. It was colorful. It was brilliant. But Nick Zinner, still, oh my God, just an incredible guitar player. The things that he does with a pedal board and a Strat, and I will say, for me, a Jaguar as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff I heard last night was incredible. And it wasn't that loud because it was at Marymore. If you don't know, Marymore is a Seattle venue. It's in a park. And so there are noise ordinances that need to be followed. And then I've read that they have some very upset neighbors.
I'm sure.
But yeah, it wasn't that loud, but it was beautiful. It was an incredible experience.
They save maps for the end, or do they get it out of the way in the beginning?
Maps, I think, was the penultimate song.
Okay.
And it was dedicated to a bunch of people, including our friends, Jesse and Nadia.
Okay.
Jesse's on the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast.
Oh, Jesse.
Yeah. Jesse. Yes.
Oh.
Sorry, I should have used a last name.
Wow. That's a big dedication.
Well, Jesse worked for them for like 13 years. Jesse was their tech.
Jesse's been everywhere.
Jesse's everywhere. He's all-knowing, all-powerful, beautiful man. Has a beautiful kid, too.
Yeah, did the kid go to the show? Was it baby's first show?
Kid was at the show earlier, carted away.
Okay.
Before we got there. But yeah, they dedicated maps to him and a bunch of other people, and then to everyone that you loved and lost, and everyone you love more than life itself.
Okay.
It was a beautiful moment. I want to say, rock music is still very much alive in 2023, and Maps is a real powerful song.
It is.
If you haven't heard the Yeah Yeah Yeahs Maps, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's understated, but beautiful, and then explosive when it needs to be. And I'm not ashamed to admit that I teared up toward the end of the song because it was just so moving. I was once again moved by the power of volume and music and being hit by it. Anyway, all of that to say that a guitar player like Nick Zinner is still very much highly influential. I think the man is, what, 38?
Yeah.
Like
something. Yeah.
He's a little bit younger than me. Where's his signature model?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's had a marked effect on indie rock guitarists, you know, low octave stuff. Shrill space echo thrills, et cetera. Where's his signature model? Where's his signature JV Strat? Like, there are so many excellent examples of players out there right now that should be getting support that maybe they're getting behind the scenes, but certainly not in a way that I can identify as a fan of music.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It feels like a lot of companies are just kind of missing.
Yeah. Well, they're also in this weird cycle of like, Maybe we need to put a pause on all these signature model guitars for a while and just spotlight the guitarists who are playing your gear and give them a little love because they're on tour and they're influencing all their fans. And maybe it doesn't need to be this official, like, oh, he picked from his favorite whatever guitar from his closet and we reinvented it.
Yeah.
Maybe we just celebrate the people we love. How's that?
I'm always a big fan of that. And I always regret, you know, when someone passes away and the tributes roll in, it's a beautiful thing to witness, but it always makes me pause and say, I should have celebrated this artist I loved more when they were alive.
Sure.
You know, I thought the same thing when Prince passed away. I thought the same thing just yesterday, was it, when the Iron Sheik passed away and everyone was, you know, glowing tributes about the man and the legend. We had someone pass away. Oh, Tina Turner passed away in the interim. And once again, I mean, like, that's a woman who was certainly celebrated in her time, but also, like, you know, before she passed, I hadn't heard anyone talk about her in a long time, but she is hugely influential.
Sure.
So that's a bit of a tangent. And look, you know, as we admitted the last time we talked about this subject, we're not business CEO people. We don't know the numbers behind the scenes. But it seems to me that it costs nothing to support artists in terms of like your roster of available models. Like you can have the Mustaines and you can have all the Slashes in the world. Sure. Come on. But you can also have the Idols, the Karangbin, who else were we talking about? The PJ Harvey. We could have all kinds of other things available. And I know that costs like in terms of research and development and, you know, carving out space in your production for another instrument. But it just seems like there's a, like you said, we've identified this like lull in the market, this like space where it feels like very little is happening and could be
very little. And it seems like, and I know that the universe is changing, but it seems like the age range that we're talked about are kind of the people who would be buying guitars right now.
It does feel like a lot of us in that age range they're the people that I hear from all the time going like, I need a deal or where can I find this? Like, someone emailed me just yesterday looking for a Dakota Red Jazz Master from 1963 or 64, very specific.
Sure.
But he's willing to go for it.
Sure.
So like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's got to be, you know, maybe the market research says differently, but I don't know. It just feels like those artists aren't getting the same attention. But you know, there are a lot of like under 30 artists that seem to be getting things going. Fender just announced that, what is the artist's name? The People Pleaser Strat. The Steve Lacy People Pleaser Stratocaster. And I will fully admit that before the Strat dropped, I didn't know who Steve Lacy was. And that's not a failing on the artist. That's a failing on me for not paying attention. But it's super exciting that someone I've never heard of has a signature model. I think that's great. And it's unique. It has a built-in fuzz circuit. I think that's a win for everybody.
Sure.
I think that's really exciting and interesting and different. And that's exactly the kind of thing that I want to see from a signature model. I want to see some chances taken.
Well, that's the other thing. Like we were just talking, Blake Mills is coming through the West Coast, playing a bunch of gigs. He's
amazing
playing with
guy.
Joni Mitchell at the Gorge on Saturday.
Yep.
Like somebody like that would actually have ideas as opposed to just, I want you to replicate this thing from the 60s or 70s that I like. Yeah.
Which, you know, which is great. I'm not knocking old guitars. I love them and own them myself. But yeah, let's get some weird ideas going.
Well, I'm looking through my guitar news and aside from the signature model, what do we have here? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say we got a new issue of Fretboard Journal.
Oh yeah, we're just gonna bounce around. The 52nd issue of the Fretboard Journal is here. It's mailing to all of our subscribers right now. Don't yell at me if you haven't seen it yet. The USPS can take their sweet time, but Mike is holding it and it looks beautiful.
I'm perusing it as we speak.
He's flipping through the pages. He stopped at the Blue Guitars article briefly.
It's a Blue Guitar article.
But then there's also a Novo article and a Harrison Whitford article that kind of flipped through. He's got a lot of reading to do. I've already read this thing 800 times, but
Harrison's the best. Love Harrison. I'm so excited about this Fano article. I cannot wait.
Nice.
The Novo, rather, but Dennis Fano. I read the name Dennis Fano before I read Novo, but I think Novo, talking about, you know, guitar makers that are exciting, I think Novo makes a damn fine guitar. Every single one that I've played has really blown my mind. Even when the specs are not initially to my liking, you know, things that I normally go for. My God, what a company. It's really cool.
You wouldn't change it? If we did the flash card with a Novo, you wouldn't change anything on it?
I mean, you know, I might have little things for my own particular playing style, Jason. I might need to change the nut width or something. But no, I think Novo as they are from the factory, I think they are perfect.
Yeah.
And they're, I would say even like, you know, their whole like not pore filled finish thing that most of their guitars seem to have, like they, you know, they show the wood grain through. That's not usually something that I personally enjoy, but I'll be damned if it.
They make
doesn't
it
look incredible. They make it work. Even on the sparkle finishes, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Looks like a sheet of Mylar has been stretched over a hunk of barn wood, and it somehow it looks incredible. Like it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very excited about issue 52 and its yellow spine.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yellow attractive spine. And eye catching.
Yeah. We're trying. In other guitar related news, we've got a bunch of events that have gone down, but the Butch Boswell acoustic guitar builder in Bend, Oregon, just did a collaboration with Mark Knopfler.
Oh,
that's sold through Rudy's. They're only going to make, they had 20 available guitars and it sold like within an hour.
Oh my
like
God.
They were they're O-sized mahogany guitars. So that was cool. Congrats to them. And then on May 19th, George Grune is now doing these like pretty cool live streams on Facebook and YouTube. He announced that he's starting the Grune Guitar Company, and it's sort of like his old designs that he did for Tacoma guitars back in the day with the sound hole, kind of looked like McPherson-y sound, like the offset.
Okay.
And so George is not an idiot. He's making his own factory, and he must know that at least in Nashville or amongst his like very high caliber of customers, he's going to be able to sell enough of these things. But it's a unique thing. Like it's a very odd thing for someone like that to just be like, I'm going to hang up my shingle and make my own guitars. And it's not through some other existing guitar. Yeah. You know, I think Tom Bukovac just did a video at the factory that George is building out. Yeah.
I watched part of that. And I'm so glad that you brought in Tacoma, because I didn't understand fully from the video, like what I was looking at. But now that you say that, I do recognize that lineage.
Yeah.
So is it only acoustic guitars? Are they building?
I think for now it is only acoustic guitars. And if you go on to the forums, there are some people who dispute whether George invented that look of guitar or somebody else at Tacoma.
Ah.
George, though, has been designing guitar. I mean, he worked with Bill Collings a million years ago. Mm. Like he's always, you know, in addition to being the guy for high-end vintage acoustics and electrics in Nashville, he's always had his kind of design sensibility hat on and worked with people. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because at first I assumed that they were going to be built just at an existing place. He did mention they were going to be in America and that made in America. And I think the price point is like under $2,500. So it's kind of a tall ask.
That's shocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. If they can do that, that's. Yeah.
And I think he's trying to fill gaps in the market where, I mean, he's not trying to build a dreadnought. He's trying to build these sort of, I think, made for recording studio acoustics, and could be something cool there to keep an eye on.
Wow. I'm really surprised. I had no idea that Grune was somehow involved with Tacoma, and I've played so many of those.
Yeah. Did you ever get, you're too young. You never went to the Tacoma factory.
Oh, I'm a little baby.
Not in Tacoma, but in Puyallup, Washington.
Well, that feels like false advertising. I was never able to get there, but I've played so many. And you know what? Because they were made in Washington, I never put together why I saw so many of them here as opposed to everywhere else I've lived in the world. So yeah, that makes sense. They were pretty decent guitars, I thought.
Yeah.
Their basses. Their acoustic basses were the only acoustic basses I ever played that felt like they actually had volume.
Yeah.
Those things are always so quiet, but every Tacoma bass I've played has been like booming and big.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I felt like, oh, I could actually use this in a gig. So very interesting. Very cool.
Yeah. Congrats. And again, the Grune live streams, I find like they're super lo-fi, but they're great. And he feels
lo-fi
questions.
As in... bitrate. We're talking 480p.
Well, they're not like 4cam, you know, it's not like watching the JHS show or something, or the, you know, the pedal show, but they're just super fun little informal things where he's just sharing his knowledge.
I love that.
And kudos to those guys at Grune, because they're doing them on a weekly or bi-monthly basis. They're doing them pretty regularly, and I've learned a lot, and George seems to be having fun, which is great
good.
To see.
Good for him.
Yeah.
He deserves a little fun after his career. Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Does George still think that you can't play blues on Jaguars?
He might. That you should write into one of his live streams.
I'm scared. I don't want to be that guy, but I've read his vintage guitar articles, and it seems like every time it's on that subject, that line makes it in. I'm like, ah, come on.
Yeah.
You can play anything on any guitar.
Chris Strakowicz, who is the founder of Arhuli Records, a very influential record label out of the Bay Area that put out Mance Lipscomb Records and Lightning Hopkins Records. And this guy, he just died.
I love Lightning.
He famously, or not so famously, would tell friends that he thought the death of American popular music was Leo Fender's invention of the electric bass. Like, he thought that was really where music took a turn.
I'm having a heart attack.
And if you listen to those records that he put out, you know, there were plenty of like great rockabilly bands with an upright bass, but he drew the line. He did not want to hear any electric bass on his
name. That's a hot take that I admire because it's so wrong, but I understand
it.
I
get where it's coming from. Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. There's a lot of good music made with an upright bass. There still continues to be a lot of great music with an upright bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to stew on that for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do on that for a little bit. Amazing human being, amazing life. There's a whole bunch of bits about him. And if you if you haven't dove down the Arhuli rabbit hole, like all those records are incredible. He also ran a great record store in the East Bay of San Francisco called Down Home Music, which was sort of their headquarters. The big news, probably the biggest industry news, I had a very tiny role in. Did you know this, Mike?
No. What did you do, Jason? What did you do?
I got to host a video with Jim DiDario, Bob Taylor, and Andy Powers. And in mid-May, Taylor announced that they were going to start using DiDario XS strings.
Yeah.
And they had me MC this video at the DiDario plant. And I was very flattered that they would ask me to do that. And I think that arguably, for the month of May at least, is probably the biggest industry news because they make a shit ton of guitars over at Taylor.
You heard it here first. Jason Verlinde is the biggest industry news.
I was a barnacle on the ship of the biggest industry news. But yeah, I mean,
that's what we do here at Fretboard Journal. We attach ourselves to the hull of the big boys.
Yes.
And we catch a ride.
Exactly. We're riding that wake as much as we can. You know, Taylor makes a ton of guitars. And,
yes.
And for decades, Elixir was their string of choice.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder what's going on at Elixir right now because that had to be a huge account for them.
Red alert. Everyone's running to battle stations. What do we do? Separate the saucer section. Get the hell out of there. Wow. Yeah, that was kind of surprising news. Not just for the string change itself, which I think DiDario makes a great string. Like their coated strings are the first ones that I've played in years where I was like, oh.
Yeah.
In fact, I have those. On I have a 66 Electric 12 at home, and it has the XTs on it because that's an instrument that I don't feel like changing the strings on.
Yeah.
So that's the one in my collection where I'm like, yes, this gets coated strings. It will always sound bright and new.
Yep.
And they've held up beautifully. And I'll be so disappointed when I finally have to take them off to do fretwork. But that is a not just a component shift. That's like a culture shift within that company to make such a huge sweeping change. Yeah, that honestly surprised me.
Yeah. I don't have any great insider information, I don't think, but I did get a tour of the factory.
Rad.
And I did hear that they are trying to make the, you know, thinnest coating imaginable that will still work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was truly incredible to walk through the DiDario plant and the video. We did it. It took multiple hours. I think if we were filming for like 3 hours, they condensed it down to like a 45-minute video.
Yeah.
But Jim DiDario, Bob Taylor, and Andy Powers are all a hoot, and they all have great ideas, and they're all super passionate. And I was the straight man who was interviewing them, and that was fun. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with Elixir because I don't know. I mean, that was their
big account. Again, not that I have any proprietary information to share, but yeah, I mean, when I think of Elixir strings, that association is still very strong in my mind, Elixir and Taylor.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Well, and how many people bought a Taylor and then thought, well, these strings work, I'll just buy another set of Elixir.
Exactly.
And now that's broken a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I think from the manufacturer side, the attraction to the coated string is just the guitar could hang up on a music store shelf for months.
Yeah.
And you don't want the strings to go dead before it sells.
And as someone who has worked in many music shops, having to change strings on things that people keep picking up is definitely not fun.
Yeah.
Especially after they go dead after a week or something. Yeah. So it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the video is 45 minutes long or so, but it was entertaining. And Andy played, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's
hard to have a conversation with Andy Powers without him at some point wanting to just play, because he is great at talking, but equally great
guitar. Some brilliant playing. Playing brilliant enough that I was like, damn, I need to buy a Taylor. You know? Yeah. I need to buy a Taylor and he needs the Dario strings. It was a really good video. Man, and you did a great job steering the conversation.
Jason,
if I could give you a compliment.
That was high pressure. I mean, it's one thing to be here in my little office in Ballard, Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, when you're talking to a nobody,
when it's other people hitting the record button and they're on the clock, like you sort of, the pressure was on.
Yeah.
But we did it, and congrats to those guys. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Elixir. Elixir is owned by Gore, the people who make Gore-Tex.
Yeah.
And it is interesting, and I don't know anything, but like I feel like the world is sort of shifting slowly away from the coated Teflon days of past.
Speaking only for myself, like I'm fine getting a little wet when I need to at this point. A couple years ago, there was when I lived in Long Beach, California, there's a Converse outlet store. It was so close to where I lived.
Okay.
And I went there all the time because they got all the weird stuff that didn't sell.
Sure.
Like the shoes that I'm wearing now came from there.
Sure.
They're like rainbowy iridescent shoes. And I like a splash of color, but they always had rows of Gore-Tex coated Chuck Taylors. And I always thought about getting them because in Long Beach, it's pretty dry most of the time, but there's like monsoon season
where
it rains 6 feet in the space of a month. And and I always thought about getting those, but I never did. Because it's like, I'm not going to spend more money.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I don't know.
It'll be interesting. I mean, they still make strings for, I think Yamaha's come with Elixirs, Maidens out of Australia.
So Yamaha is no small fish. That's still good.
Yamaha is not. What other guitar news do we have for the month of May and the first week of June?
Did anything happen?
There were some guitar events.
Oh yes,
that I attended, and a guitar event that I'm planning. I think the first event, this is like on the acoustic side for the most part, May 19th, the LeConner Guitar Festival here in Washington State went on, which is one of these handmade guitar expos where you can go meet. Megan Wells wasn't there this year, but Noemi Guitars, amazing builder from Italy, was there, and it was great to meet her. She's going to be in the next, or not the next, but she's going to be in a future Fretboard Journal. M Tone, Matt Proctor from Portland, but another electric builder. But it was a 3-day handmade guitar show for the most part. Mm. And I went there and I met Tangent. I met a guru, which was pretty cool. I met a spiritual leader.
Oh,
walking on the streets of LeConner, Washington.
Oh, I thought you were a guitar industry guru, and I was waiting to hear who the name was. But like a real genuine guru.
Yeah, I met my son was with me manning the Fretboard Journal booth, and he's 12, and he sort of reached his limit each day, as one would, just sitting behind a table trying to sell
guitar
magazines.
Child labor laws are in place for a reason.
So we went for a walk, and lo and behold, right across the street on Main Street, LeConner, Washington, this tiny little town, was Guru Singh, who was like a big Kundalini yoga guru. He's on the Rich Roll podcast like just today, but he's been on it multiple times. And hundreds of thousands of people follow this guy. And I had to go up to him and say, "You're Guru Singh." And he's also a guitarist. And so he's going to be on the Fretboard Journal podcast in the next month or two, we're trying to coordinate.
Way.
Yeah, he got my information. I'm like, hey, there's a handmade guitar show. You love guitars. I asked him about his guitar because he plays this guitar that for it shows up in some of his videos and it's like bedazzled and it kind of looks cool. Like it could be like an old Farrington or just some weird 70s nice. Thing. It was a Gibson B25, I think.
Oh yeah.
But he did all the, he's like, oh no, I put all the jewels in it myself.
That's so cool.
He had a single out in the 60s when he was, before he was Guru Singh, that sort of sounds like Donovan. And he's just had this fascinating life. And had my son not reached his limit at 1:54 p.m. or whatever it was.
That sounds like when I reach my limit.
Yeah, because this guy's in L.A. Like, he's not even a Washington State resident.
Wow.
And so it was just super weird timing. And I got to fanboy on a yogi, which was super interesting.
And that is a phrase that I have never before heard. I got to fanboy on a yogi. It
sounds like an album title, actually.
It sounds like a skateboard trick.
Yeah, yeah. It does. It does,
Tony
actually.
Tony Hawk would have done in his heyday.
On May 28th, over on the East Coast, there was the Brooklyn Guitar Show.
Oh, that
which
was fun.
Was a one, this was kind of a cool model because it was a one-day, I don't know, 4 or 5 hour long thing with 10 or so guitar makers. And it was in a bar, I think. It was just this like informal, low-key thing. Our buddy Adam from Iris Guitars was there. Carbonetti Guitars, Mountain Cat Guitars.
James is the best.
La Bella Strings. And so, you know, as people start to question the worth of NAMs and all these things, like you could collectively get 5 or 6 fellow guitar making friends or pedal making friends and take over a cool little corner of a brewery or something on a Sunday afternoon and throw your own guitar show. So
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Fully support that. I was at an event like that years ago down in LA. There was a Stompbox exhibit.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. It was brooming? It was booming with activity.
Yeah.
And I got to meet some great pedal builders and try some stuff that I'd never encountered before, like Red Panda.
Yeah.
I got to ask a lot of questions about their pedals, and I don't know if they thought I was wasting their time, but I was like, I don't understand this. And I was trying to be as like open-minded as possible. But, you know, I'm at a point where I know I don't understand every effect pedal in the world. And I need my hand held sometimes. And they were gracious and kind.
I'm glad to hear that you even, because I consider you to be, you know, an authority in the world of electric guitars. And I love to know that even the best of them sometimes need the owner's manual.
There's some stuff that I don't have the IQ for because it's so above me. It's like things that like take your signal apart and put them back together in random orders, or like, you know, a bit crush them, are things that I love the sound of, but I have no idea how to use and I need somebody to show me. I'm very much a visual learner. So like if someone can sit me down.
Sure.
And say, here, twist this knob and get it. Like that works for me. So I, you know, stuff like that, like the Stompbox exhibit, like really helped me understand how a Red Panda effect could make sense. So yeah, those things are amazing. I love those like DIY things.
Yeah.
And speaking of DIY guitar shows, festivals, August is a big, big month.
Yeah. We've got a Fretboard Summit, our second one in Chicago. At the Old Town School of Folk Music, August 24th to 26th. And the thing just keeps snowballing bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
So if anyone out there is waffling, there are still affordable hotels on Expedia.
Mm.
I don't know what everyone's airfare situation is, but mine was dirt cheap from Seattle to Chicago. Mm. And it's going to be a 3-day long guitar hang.
Gosh.
And the lineup is bonkers. And there's a lot of great players who are just showing up and builders who are just showing up not to exhibit or do a show, but they're just like, I want to be at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Chris Benson at Benson Amps is coming. Chris, I don't have a job for him. He's not lugging amps. He's just going to be there. And I'm super honored that he'd take the time out of his schedule to do that. Josh Scott, as I think we mentioned before, is hosting the Germanium Chef Fuzz Pedal Challenge, the Iron Chef themed pedal build off. And
I
it's Robert Keeley against Heather Brown. And then he's got an all-star panel of judges, which I won't even get into, but Josh, I'm now getting CC'd on emails from Josh Scott. And that guy, I don't think sleeps at all. And what? He is always thinking about stuff. And he is plotting this thing out like nobody's business. And so that's going to be fun.
Oh, I'm very excited.
Bill Frisell is going to lead a guitar orchestra that anyone can join.
Bill is the best.
Via Mardot is going to score a silent movie in real time. We've got fretboard. I mean, Tommy Emmanuel, Jorma Kacconen, and Jeff Parker playing. Like, it's going to be a stellar lineup. Mm-hmm. And there is a 50 exhibitor guitar show going on within the Summit grounds.
Oh my gosh.
So it's going to be a pretty cool hang.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. I need to get my plane tickets.
You should.
I forgot about that.
You're going to be there. So the Summit is taking on, obviously we're putting out podcasts, got the magazine coming out. But the Summit is, as summer rears its head, will take on a bigger and bigger part of my life because there's just a lot of moving pieces. It feels a little bit like a 3-day long wedding in terms of all the planning and events and all the crazy stuff. But it's going to be fun. I've said this a few times in like some emails, but like they're really, I cannot think of another place in the world where the public for what's essentially like a $350 registration fee can meet Steve McCreery from Collings, Bob Taylor, as well as these handmade luthiers, as well as folks like yourself, Bill Frisell, Tom Bukovac's going to be there.
Oh, cool.
Doing a thing. Him and Brian Sutton, like all of these great people who you've seen on YouTube or you've admired for years in magazines, yes, you can sometimes get a badge to NAMM, but you're not going to have a real conversation with anybody at NAMM. Mm-hmm. Like they're all there to sell their stuff to their dealers.
Yeah.
This is sort of a relaxed, laid back, retreaty thing where people can kind of pick the brains of their heroes, and it's super fun. And then we've got all sorts of lectures and talks and workshops too. So,
man, I can't wait. That's going to be great.
It is going to be great. Yeah. What else? There was a tribute show that was sort of informal, or not informal, but under the radar for the late, great David Lindley at the Claremont Folk Center on May 28th.
Oh, wow.
We have a story on that on our website, but I think it was, that's the store that Ben Harper's family has owned for decades. It's sort of a folk music institution. Ben's family, Ben's mom is still there all the time. And and it's the town where David Lindley lived. And so they reunited El Rayo X minus David Lindley. Like there was some cool stuff. And we have some cool photos on our website as well as the story behind it. Would have been a great to be a fly on the wall, but it was just like an informal thing for friends in the area. Mm-hmm. What else in the greater Fretboard Journal community can I announce? Mason Stoops was on Tim Pierce's YouTube channel.
I watched that. Anything with Mason in it, I will watch. He's one of my favorite players. He's a hell of a guy.
Yeah.
But man, I'm captivated anytime he picks up an instrument, especially when it's that thing that Duncan built, Goth Gumby.
Yes.
The fretless guitar with the sustainer in it. I cannot get enough of that.
Yeah.
And Tim was holding that like Seafoam or Daphne Blue Gretsch the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got to say there was a light somewhere that was pink and it was projecting onto the guard. And I thought initially that it had a pink guard instead of a gold guard. And I was 100%.
You were ready to buy it now.
And then he turned away from the light and it was gold again. I was like, it's a little disappointing. But what a cool video, just getting inside Mason's head and like hearing them both talk about process and what it's like being a studio musician. I don't know. I feel like maybe some folk have this idea that like being a studio musician is just like going and hanging out with buddies, but it's work. And hearing them talk about the work that gets put into things and the disappointment of coming up with a really great idea and everyone going, that's not it. And play the simple thing again, was just joy. It was just pure joy to hear.
It was. I think it's officially titled "Who is this go-to guitarist for major artists?" and that is the video we're referring to. I'll include a link in the
Mason
show notes.
Mason Stoops. Yes.
Yeah, Mason, I think, might be coming to Chicago too because his cohort, Adam Levy, is going to be there.
Adam is amazing too.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Yeah. We got both Adams. We got Adam Miller coming and Adam Levy. It's going to be
Mike
fun.
Adams.
Yes. Oh, I see a trio. I love it.
Yeah.
Put how guitars jazz, in each how are your jazz chops?
I'm going to be able to hold terrible. Your own.
Oh.
But you know, maybe if we're talking free jazz, I can make some atonal stuff happen.
Okay.
Easy.
What else happened in the world of guitars in the last 5 weeks?
Like literally nothing. I've been paying attention. I mean,
I guess with all the deaths lately, no news is good news. yeah. Gabe from the Punch Brothers leaving Punch Brothers. There's Brittany Haas news. Coming
yep.
in.
Yep.
Brittany Haas is amazing. That's going to be cool to watch that. I think Gabe is just probably so busy with production work. I don't know. I don't have any insights, but love Punch Brothers.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else? Our buddy Trevor Boone over at Emerald City Guitars just did his 27th successful burst transaction.
I know.
20. How many are there? There's like...
It's
that's
incredible.
Like 1/10 of the known examples
yeah.
have gone through Emerald City Guitars.
That's
I think
amazing.
There's more than 270.
And
don't correct
to Trevor
me.
On that because, man, it's just... Can you think of many other people who just seem to find those? Is John from True Vintage gets them a lot, but
not
I don't know.
27.
Not 27. Like, that's wild.
I mean, is Trevor even 27 years old? I think he might be. But congrats. I mean, that is whether or not you agree with the valuation of a 1959 or 58 or 60 Gibson Les Paul. It's admirable, and it's a testament to their longevity and the fact that, I mean, it's got to be kind of a ballsy all-in move to even get one of those guitars in the first place to then sell. So it's not an insignificant investment. I'm sure a lot of those are on consignment as well. But
well, here's something. If you are at all a fan of Oasis or Noel Gallagher, that pedal show
yeah.
on YouTube just put out like an hour and 40-minute interview with Noel.
Yeah.
And I only watched half an hour of it so far.
I'm about 45 minutes in.
He's in such a good mood.
He wasn't.
He hasn't insulted mood. Anybody yet. It's an incredible interview. And despite not having watched too much of the TPS content myself, like it was really engaging.
Yeah.
Noel is telling stories about Johnny Marr and Les Pauls and WEM amplifiers. And it's really good. And yeah. I am myself a very big Oasis fan. That was one of my favorite bands
yeah.
Back in the 90s. Noel's music continues to move me. You know, What's the Story? Morning Glory is like the loudest record on the planet. And I love it.
Yeah.
So it was an excellent watch so far. I can't wait to finish it.
Yeah. They went to his studio.
Yeah.
They have their own studio, which is also ridiculously cool. But yeah, they went to his studio and it was the Johnny Marr stuff was, I've listened to those records. They're just part of the fabric of
yeah.
pop culture. But he was like, oh yeah. And then Johnny Marr gave me this guitar that all the Smith songs were written on, you know? Yeah. And it's like the cool little, he was just so open, you know? I mean,
yeah.
we've all heard stories about the feuding and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so it was fun to just hear him loose and just,
and know. Happy to be there. Like just like
yeah.
having a good, good time.
He was in Seattle like a
yeah.
week ago too.
Yeah. I saw Trevor.
Yeah.
I posted a photo with
yeah.
him. I was jealous because I always wanted to meet Noel. I haven't gotten to the part where he talks about jazz masters yet, but I've heard,
mm-hmm.
and that makes me very excited. I can't wait to hear more about that. And the, you know, I was also pleased as punch to see a Marshall valve state in that video because
the very
that,
beginning, yeah,
which shocked me because one of the first like decent amplifiers I had when I was growing up as a player was the 112 Marshall valve state. I can't remember if it was a 65 or what exact model it was, yeah. but I had one of those and everybody made fun of it for being, oh, you have a metal amp. Oh, you have the shitty, like
yeah.
it has one tube in it, solid state, it sucks. I always kind of liked it. I never knew that Noel was using one of those. And so hearing one
yeah.
again after all this time took me right back to being in my bedroom playing along to Oasis songs on mine, not knowing that it was somehow involved. So yeah, that was real special.
Well, and I at least an hour into it, it's kind of funny because it's that pedal show, but he doesn't use any pedals for the first hour. He's just writing all those hits going into one amp. Or two amps. What it ended up being. But it is fun to just see him do like, oh, yeah, and then I just did this. And
then I just did this. That's how all of his songwriting stories go. And then I just did this, and it was a hit. Gold record, number one. Anthemic. I really appreciated hearing his thoughts on melody and how that was the most important thing, and that the guitar solos were, you know, probably because of like his own playing style. They were never like acrobatic guitar solos.
Yeah.
I could learn them, you know, me and my ham-fisted approach to the guitar, I could learn them and I love them.
Yeah.
So that's really all you need in a good song and a good solo. There's a lot of gold in that video. So that's worth checking out.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great. Again, a kind of a dud month. I do want to give a shout out to Fretboard Journal contributor John Thomas, who was just on this podcast and is in that new 52nd issue writing about the blue guitars of Scott Chinnery. Tomorrow, we are recording on Thursday, June 8th. Tomorrow morning in Banff, Alberta, Canada, John Thomas, who's been fighting prostate cancer for the last few years, he's getting on a bike and going to be riding all the way to the U.S.-Mexico border with all the shit that he needs strapped to his bike with a whole bunch of other athletes who are doing this thing called the Great Divide Race. And
wow.
Rooting for you, John. Maybe you're listening to podcasts on this bike ride. I have no idea I think he said he was listening to audiobooks when I interviewed him. But probably going to take most people a month and a half to do that. And because I know the one participant, and he was actually on our podcast, I've been following some of these Facebook groups, and I am not a bike packer, which is what this world is called. But I found it very moving to just like, you know, you always hear about people climbing Everest or whatever, and you're like, I don't know that guy. He sounds like a CEO of something. but to just see these average males and some of them are really high-end athletes as well, but like to just see anyone can do this race. It's very informal. You just show up. Some people spend 2 months or the entire summer doing it, and some people will do it in 3 weeks and like not sleep really. 2,700 something miles, mostly gravel, mostly off of highways. But I've found it super moving to just, they have rig rundowns of like what people's packs look like. And I cannot, it's so foreign to me to think, what would it look like for me to just check out of civilization for 5 weeks and ride a bike?
Yeah.
But I am going to go to Butte, Montana and meet John.
Wow.
And I will bring a bike. I'm not sure that I'll be able to keep up with him, but I will hang out with him on one of his rest days in about 2 weeks. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
I think he is the only guitarist I recognized on the doing this race, but he's a great guy, got really into the cycling world. There seems to be a fair number of, you know, Lee Ronaldo is really into cycling and Josh Scott.
Really?
He's really into cycling. There's a little bit of overlap, but it's been kind of fascinating to just kind of go, wow, this is quite a little production.
Well, I mean, best of luck to John. That's incredible. Yeah. What a mammoth undertaking.
Yeah, he's been training for years, even as he went through chemotherapy and got COVID umpteen times. Like, he's just been a machine. I'm a little worried about, like, how you re-enter back in civilization after being a feral cyclist for 5-6 weeks. Like, I don't know how that looks. Can you even go back to wearing regular clothes and, like, watching TV? I'm not sure that you can.
I imagine you'd be changed by an experience, but probably for the better, I would hope.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He, you do some working out, so you might appreciate this,
but he's basically said
that, and I think I've read this elsewhere too, that it's basically an eating contest of like, can you down 5,000 to 7,000 calories a day?
Oh, yeah.
And most of your stops are, because you can't carry 3 weeks of food, mostly you're like going to convenience stores and gas stations or whatever it crosses and buying whatever funky thing they have available that is high caloric.
Weenies that have been turning for 25 hours.
Yeah. We did a whole podcast with him, but John is mostly vegetarian and has been training himself to not be vegetarian to keep like meat down, because is going to be essential. Yeah. There, you know, you can't only eat so many Cheetos and Doritos, you know, when you're riding a bike for 2,700 miles.
So. That's so amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So I'll be seeing John. And if anybody listening to this lives along the Continental Divide, this race literally zigzags and traverses, and all the hills in the country you can throw at it.
Wow.
Are from Wyoming to Montana down to New Mexico. So,
Well, it feels like we're wrapping up, but any personal news? Anything? You doing okay? Jason, you doing fine?
I'm doing okay. You know, the plight of the small business owner is never all that easy. I don't think for anyone. And I think the plight of like creatives just trying to like keep being creative while you're also trying to pay bills and be normal.
Yep. It's trying to run up that hill every day is exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you have any new videos or new projects that we should be tuning into?
I've got a video dropping tomorrow. What is the date? May? We're still May? This is June.
No, we are in June. It's June 8th. We're recording on a Thursday.
My brain is fried. But yeah, I'm releasing a video tomorrow over on YouTube about bending vibrato arms, which is a question that I get all the time. Every time I post a photo of one of my jazz masters, Jaguars, people are always asking me, like, where did you get that arm? Not realizing that it's the stock arm, and I've just bent it in a way so that it meets my palm around the bridge in a way that I like, that's really comfortable for me. And this is something that people have been doing for decades upon decades, like the, you know, the old Chet Atkins Bigsby arms were super curvy. But yeah, you can look on Reverb now and find jazz masters with arms that have like a 90 degree kink in them so that they like snake around the bridge and hit someone's palm so they could just, you know, hit it. So yeah, I've got a video explaining how to do that. And I think the people aren't going to like the method that I use, which you mentioned I work out. Like I just bend them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which will not work for everybody.
This is like the 2023 equivalent of you ripping a phone book in half. Nobody has those anymore. So now it's all about those.
Bending a Fender tremolo requires some muscular fortitude.
Yeah.
But I do include a method for people who may not be as meaty as me, involving a heat gun and copious warnings to please not burn yourself, lest I be accosted by someone's legal representative.
Yeah. Wouldn't you get more views if you involved like a butane torch somehow?
Oh, probably, but I'm not that crafty. I don't know. Plus, I'm scared. I'm scared of things blowing up. The few times I've had to like weld have been the most stressful things I've ever gone through. So like no, and anything involving combustibles, I just stay away from.
Okay.
If it's a heat gun, something that just blows hot air, that's about as far as I go. But yeah, I'm dropping that video. And otherwise, things feel pretty normal and pretty good. I hope that you, listener, have enjoyed this bummer-free episode of the Fretboard Journal
podcast.
It's been
pretty bummer. If anybody wants to follow us on Instagram, we're going to have Mike bend a trem into a pretzel with his brute strength.
I don't know if I'm that strong. Nah! Do my Arnold impression while...
Go do it! Go for it! Bend it!
That's stupid. You can edit that. But yeah, we'll look for me on YouTube.
All right.
Yeah. And happy bending.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, we'll recap what's left of June sometime in a few weeks.
Thanks, Jason. Hopefully something interesting happens.
Get on it, guitar companies.
Dude,
get on it, musicians.
Shit.